This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Interestingly enough, John Tortorella, head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers. We'll see the Flyers in action against the Rangers tonight, 1-12 on the board around the NHL. Apologized for the non-response when asked about Felix Sandstrom's play on Sunday. This is from a tweet from Adam Kimmelman. From Tortorella, quote, "I made a terrible mistake with you guys the other night. You might have asked me about Sandy. My body language was wrong. What I should have said to you was he tried, Sandy tried. Things happened this year that put our goaltending situation into a state of flux. Sandy did not deserve that from me. You had the perfect right to ask that question. He did not deserve that from me. It was wrong." That from John Tortorella, head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers. With that, we'll bring in Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. Hello, Friedge.
What's your old line? If you mess up, dress up and then fess up.
If you mess up, fess up and dress up. You almost got it in the right order there, but yes, that's what John Tortorella did.
Well, to me, it would make sense that you get dressed before you speak to people. But I guess in Merrick world, that's not necessarily true.
No, the idea is you admit it right away, and then you put on your show, and then you go and do your thing because you've put it all behind you. When you mess up, you fess up and dress up.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay, very good. I want to get to the Philadelphia Flyers here in a couple of seconds, but initially, here's what I wonder about, and we got a lot to talk about from last night as well. Here's what I wonder about, and we saw this moment initially in that Minnesota-Nashville game with John Hines and the Marc-Andre Fleury goalie pull in overtime, and then we wondered about goalies getting pulled in tie games with a couple of moments left, trying not to deny other teams any points at all, and trying to get the full two. Tonight we have a game between Washington and Detroit. Now, you know, as I was just talking to Tarik Al-Bashir, as much as Washington is chasing the Red Wings, they're also chasing the Philadelphia Flyers. Yep. I'm going to go around the block with something. I'm going to go around the block here with something with you, Elliot. This from Mike Comito, our good friend from Sudbury, who tweets this one out. On this day in 1931, Boston's pioneering Art Ross pulled his goalie for an extra attacker. With a minute remaining in a playoff game against the Habs, the Bruins trailing 1-0, Ross yanked Tiny Thompson for Red Beattie, but the Bruins failed to score. Now, on NHL record, I believe that is the very first goalie pull in the history of the NHL. If you are the Detroit Red Wings or if you are the Washington Capitals tonight, and as it is important for you to get points, it's also important to deny the other team points, whether it is Newsy Lalonde or whether it is Spencer Carberry, do you think any of these two would entertain the idea if this game was tied in the third period with a couple of minutes left or maybe a minute left, pulling their goaltender?
You know, actually, I have to tell you, I thought about it last night watching St. Louis.
You did, eh? Yeah, I wondered. Yeah. I wondered, too. Knowing about Vegas, that, yeah, good point.
Yeah, like, you know, that is actually, the only thing is, I've yet to see anything analytically inclined, because there is math involved here, that would say, is your better route you risking losing the point or you taking a point for losing in overtime? That's the one part of this equation that we don't know yet. Yes, you could make an argument for sure, that it's better for you to get 2 points and the other team to get zero. But somebody has to show me how it benefits you to risk getting 0 points instead of one. Like, if the other team's going to get two, isn't it better for you to ensure yourself of one?
So I had someone, I'm glad you mentioned this. Let me try to find this here quickly.
Someone actually did this for you?
I had some.
Your staff, your people
someone,
did it for you?
I have to be very careful how I phrase this. This is someone on
good.
A team, okay?
Okay.
This is someone from a team who sent me this one, who heard our conversation about Nashville, Minnesota from a few weeks ago. And we were talking about, you know, the real power move would have been to do it with like a minute left. Not
when you were calling
when you were calling
John Hines a coward. Yeah, I remember that.
Very good. This person's hang on, I just got it here. Let me make sure I have this right. Okay. This is comparing the goals to the shots on goal. Now, shots on goal are obviously goals when you have the goalie pulled. So since 07-08, there have been, now this, mind you, this is from a couple of weeks ago. There have been 645 4-on-3 goals and 240 3-on-4 shots on goal.
Okay.
The point that he's trying to make is the real power move would have been to do it at the end of regulation and not do it during the during the overtime. You know what I'm getting at here?
Yes.
Because all those other goals, those shots on goal, that those have a greater chance of affecting the game, if you know, or I'm probably doing a ham-fisted way of explaining this, but it doesn't make that much sense to do it on the 4-on-3.
Well, okay, but that doesn't end the question of what I asked you. My question is, okay, I get all that. That makes sense. But the one hole I have in the argument is, if you win, it all works out. You get 2 and they get 0. We all understand that.
Yeah.
But what if you lose? What makes more sense? You get 0 or you get 1?
Well, what's your percentage of getting the 2 points to begin with? 50-50. If you get it in overtime, it's 50-50.
Is it 50-50?
Isn't it?
Like, I think it would be determined on, first of all, who's the better team. That would certainly have a who's the better team would be number one. Who do you have on the ice might be another. Who's your goaltender?
Yeah.
Like, I don't believe it's 50-50. Like, okay, look, we're getting into all this trouble about gambling these days, but like, a gambler would tell you it's not 50-50. It depends on who's on the ice, who's in goal. You know, what kind of night you're having. Like, I would bet you when Buchnevich got the penalty shot last night, which Thompson made a great save on, the odds are significantly higher than 50-50. So I don't buy the whole idea
a penalty shot odd is going to be higher than overtime.
Okay, you're right. That's a bad example, but I'll say this. Like, let's say it's Vancouver and Chicago in overtime tonight. Are you going to tell me that's 50-50? Now, Minnesota,
that game might be
a little bit different, but I'm not convinced it's 50-50. There's always edges.
Okay.
You would be a terrible gambler, Merrick. Terrible.
I am, and that's why I generally stay away. But here becomes a question then, because we're framing this sort of all around Detroit and Washington.
Yeah.
Is there a team that you think has a distinct advantage in the overtime there, 3-on-3? Or is it closer to,
I'd have to see what their records are. I'd have to see who's in the lineup. I'd have to see who's in goal. Like, you could collect the information, probably tip it one way or the other.
Yeah. So you were saying then about St. Louis last night. So you were saying that Drew Bannister is a coward for not pulling the goalie then.
Not only Drew Bannister, but Doug Armstrong and the entire city of St. Louis.
Including ownership as well. We'll throw them in the combination.
No, I'm talking about like everybody who lives, not just St. Louis, but St. Louis and the greater vicinity of St. Louis. Yes. All cowards.
All cowards, all of them.
No, but like, you know, like that, like that's the thing. Like, I just wanted to say, Jeff, like when that game, after they scored and Brandon Saad scored to tie it, like that was midway to late third period. As it counted down, I was thinking, because like I'm looking at that situation. First of all, St. Louis is behind them. I think Vegas has a game in hand on them. And also, yes. Vegas has the tiebreaker. I believe they have two more regulation wins. But I know they definitely have the tiebreaker. And I was sitting there thinking, if I had all of that in my head, I would consider it. But again, the one thing you're not telling me is, like, to my head, basic logic, it seems to me to be the smarter move. If I'm going to lose, take the point. Like, because instead of being six back, I'm five back. And that would seem the better position. You would have to explain to me how that isn't the sensible move to take the guaranteed point.
The point being through all of it is, it's at this time of year that we start now to see goofy stuff, like early goalie pulls and goalie pulls during tied games. We saw the one with John Hines.
Well, that's the thing. Now he's put it in everyone's head. He's put it in everyone's head. He's the first guy to do it. Now someone else is going to do it, and then we'll see if someone takes it a little bit farther.
And that would be the tied game at the towards the end of the third. Pull your goalie then to try to deny the other team a chance to get any points at all. Anyhow, let's rewind to last night here quickly. That Vegas St. Louis game was a monster one. I mean, now it looks like six, but you're right with the regulation win tiebreaker. It's a 6-point difference between the St. Louis Blues and the Vegas Golden Knights. That's an absolute crusher for them. And then, you know, this was a clinching scenario for the Vancouver Canucks. Okay, they squandered it. Big deal. They're going to get their playoff position eventually. Anyhow, don't worry about that whatsoever. But all of a sudden now, we have a Los Angeles Kings team that's starting to creep up on the Edmonton Oilers, and we have a Los Angeles Kings team where that top line with Kopitar and Kempe and Byfield is really starting. And again, last night they were the best line on the ice, really starting to do something. Have we been giving the Los Angeles Kings too much of the short end of the stick in all of this?
Well, the one thing I would just say, the answer I think is no, and the reason I think the answer is no is because great things were expected of them, and Jeff, like at the beginning of the year, you can't say that people disrespected the Kings. There were people who were predicting great things for the Kings, and it was their own shortcomings and own inconsistencies that blew that up. So when I look at it, I don't look at it as people are disrespecting the Kings. I look at it more as the Kings were not playing at a level that I believe a lot of people expected that they could be at. So, you know, I think a lot of the, like, at their best, they suppress shots. They don't give you a lot. And they're hard to play against. They're very structured. Mm-hmm. Everybody goes where everyone's supposed to be. But at their worst, they're inconsistent. They're undisciplined. They take really dumb penalties and take big risks when they shouldn't take them. And at times, they've been the architect, of their own undoing. So I don't think people have not taken them seriously. I think the issue there is that people have expected more of them than they have delivered. Now, I'll say this. I think they could be trouble for people in the playoffs. Like I said, they play a really disciplined style, and they can really prevent you from going places that you want to go. But I'll tell you something else about what someone said to me about the Kings. They said you would think that they would be a lot harder to play against than they are. And that is one thing that they're really not, like, while they're well-structured, they're not overly physical. And that has surprised teams a little bit.
The one thing, and again, I'm saying this half sort of tongue-in-cheek because it's only a seven-game audit, but for whatever reason, you know, seems to be an absolutely huge piece here for the Los Angeles Kings. We tend not to talk a lot about because, you know, Doughty gets a lot of the oxygen and Kopitar and Byfield lately, etc., and Philip Deneau and Pierre-Luc Dubois, sometimes for the good, sometimes not. There's one player, Victor Arvidsson.
Yeah, he's important to them.
With Victor Arvidsson in the lineup, again, it's only it's going to sound weird, but listen, with Victor Arvidsson in the lineup, they're 7-0.
He's a good player.
Now, I'm not saying it's just because he's really good. And he kind of makes everything fit there. Like, no one seems out of position. He's got his spot on that left side, and everything just fits a lot better. No one has to play up a line when Victor Arvidsson is there. Again, it's only 7 games, but I can't help but point out that when Victor Arvidsson's in the lineup, this Kings team wins. Like, he's a really, really important piece of the Los Angeles Kings here, Elliot. That's the only thing that I wanted to say about Victor Arvidsson. They don't lose when he's in the lineup.
I agree with that. I think he's a really good player. Really good player. Really good player.
Jonathan Marchessault, so with the overtime heroics yesterday. Maddie and I were talking about this off the top of the program. I want to get to the Maple Leafs and the Devils here because you're at practice this morning. Should probably park some time and talk about Winnipeg with Gabe Vilardi and the Edmonton Oilers in a second as well. But quick thought on Jonathan Marchessault. You know, we were throwing it around at the beginning of the program. You know, Bruce Cassidy talking about big game player, and we've seen him score, you know, huge goals, not just in the regular season, but in the playoffs. And he's one of the original Vegas Golden Knights players. And everybody loves him, etc. How much of his future do you think is tied up in the money decisions revolving around players like Noah Hanifin that Vegas has to make at the end of the year?
Well, I think I would say that existed before. Like, I don't, even before they traded for Noah Hanifin, they were trying to get guys like him and Carter Stevenson and Carrier signed, and they haven't been able to do it. So the only flaw I really have with your question, Jeff, is I think that this pre-existed what happened when Hanifin was acquired. Now, did it add another variable to the equation? Yeah, I think it did. But I think it already existed. I've heard the issue potentially for Marchessault and Stevenson actually has been term, and that obviously the longer the term is wanted, the less of a financial risk the Golden Knights want. And you know, in both those cases, those guys are slightly older. You know, Stevenson just turned 30, I think, and Marchessault is closer to mid-30. So the issue there has been term. And, you know, I definitely believe that they want to keep the players. I definitely think that they would like to keep Marchessault in particular. But, you know, sometimes you've got to make tough decisions, and Vegas is not interested in making, is not afraid of making tough decisions. So, look, like, I look at it as, in a perfect world, I think they'd love to keep him. I think he'd love to stay. But clearly, Vegas has a line here. And I think that line is a lot to do with term. And so far, they haven't been able to bridge it. But, you know, that was a great game last night. Thompson made an incredible save on the penalty shot in overtime. Oh. And then Marchessault, with just using the time and the patience to score the winning goal, just basically on the next shift. You know, Marchessault, he's a great player. He's a really committed, determined, great player. And I have a ton of respect for him, and I'm very curious to see how it plays out.
Yeah, you and me both. Okay, New Jersey and Toronto, one of the dozen games on the board around the NHL this evening. You were there at practice this morning for the Maple Leafs and the New Jersey Devils. What is the update with Mitch Marner? What is the update with Matt Murray? And anything else you can share with us from the skates this morning?
Yeah, so Matt Murray, for the first time, I think today was the first time he skated with the full team. And he's going to be a guy that, he has a visit with the doctor sometime in the first week or so of April. And at that time, it's basically the first time he could be cleared. I don't know exactly. I don't want to turn this into like some fiasco. I don't know if it's cleared to play or cleared to resume more serious practicing, but basically he has an appointment with the doctor. the earliest it is next week, from what I understand. It's in April. And so at that time, you know, they'll have to decide what the path is going to be. Like, I think Murray wants to play. Like, you know, he's playing for another contract, and I believe he wants to play out there. However, you know, like, they're not just going to throw him into an NHL game. You know, he'll probably be sent to the American Hockey League on a conditioning stint, and they'll want to work him in with Hildeby and whatever they've got going on down there. But basically, Murray is, you know, within a couple weeks of being able to clear, of being able to ramp it up, as long as nothing happens. Marner, they're going to decide tomorrow about, it sounds like they're going to decide tomorrow about ramping it up and what his schedule is going to be. I just really get the sense here that they feel they have a bit of a luxury. Like, they don't seem all that bothered by what he's got. It's just, you know what, it's we have time. We might as well rest him. That's what they're going to do. So we should know more tomorrow. Riley is a new one. They said he could play tonight, but it doesn't sound like it. And Edmondson won't play tonight. Like, it was weird. I noticed that they have so many players, Jeff. Edmondson didn't even have a stall in the room today. So, like, that's probably a good sign that he's not playing tonight. I would take that. If you don't have a stall in the room, you're probably not playing. All of a sudden, you know, Wool's going to play. They don't really seem too worried about anybody here health-wise. It's just various nicks and bangs and bruises. And I guess we'll see what shows up tonight. Like, Jack Hughes didn't skate this morning, but it sounds like he's okay to play tonight.
Was concerned about Nico Hischier the other day in the game against the Islanders. The knee on knee with Anders Lee sounds like could have been a lot worse than it was, and he did come back and he played in that third period. But we've seen you know, situations before where you get knee on knee, player comes back and it doesn't really get you until the next morning when you wake up and maybe your knee balloons and swells and say, oh, we got some problems here. But when you look at the New Jersey Devils and, you know, talk around people in the organization, essentially, the question revolves around what happened. Like, I know that injuries were a factor. You mentioned Jack Hughes, and that was a monster injury for them. Dougie Hamilton, that story is told as well. The net mining is another story. But when you look back at this year for the New Jersey Devils, you know, the what happened question clearly is front and center, because this looked like a team that was ready to take the next step in their development. I know that rebuilds are a bunny hop. They're not a straight line. I think we all get that. But I don't think any of us expected this. What happened this year with New Jersey?
Well, you know, I think this. I think the obvious thing right now is they've got to be thinking, you know, I wonder if with 2020 hindsight they would have made the goalie move earlier. And you know what? They have some talented young goalies there, particularly Schmid, but it's never linear, right? There's always detours and it never goes in a straight line. Unfortunately for them, it didn't go in a straight line. And I wonder if they would have done it sooner for someone like Allen, if they could have. That's number one. And number two, like, you know what, with Hamilton hurt and the two guy and the guys they let go of, you know, I just think it put people into roles that they weren't ready for. You know, like, that's the thing about sports is, you know, sometimes you have to make roster decisions, and that's fine. But what it does is it can thrust people into roles. It's not like they're not good enough to do it, but they may not just be ready enough to do it. And I spent a lot of time watching Luke Hughes lately, and that kid is going to be a hell of a player. But there's no question that at times this year he's been forced into a role that he may not have been ready for. And he's not the only one. There's been a couple of times there. So, I think Luke Hughes in the long term, first of all, we already knew he was going to be a great player. Number two, I think he's going to be – I think this is going to make him an even better player because he's lived it, he's seen it, and he knows how hard this is. But I just think this year – he and other guys on that blue line got thrust into positions they weren't ready for. And I think that's what happened. Also, unfortunately, when their goaltending collapsed, they just didn't have... I wonder now if they look at what Allen's done and they said, you know what, we probably should have done this in December or January.
Yeah. Elsewhere on the NHL this evening, it's a pretty busy night, and it's an interesting night as well. There's Detroit-Washington. Washington has eyes on a couple of spots, second wild card, third in the Metropolitan as well. Was talking to Tarik El-Bashir before you came on, and, you know, comparing the schedules, Washington's schedule is hard. We've talked about that before. The schedule for the Philadelphia Flyers, not that you want to award wins just based on who they're playing, but after tonight's game against the Rangers, it's Habs and Hawks and Islanders and Sabres and Blue Jackets and Montreal again. Although I do wonder if that last game of the season, Philadelphia and Washington, is for a playoff spot. Wouldn't that be a juicy one on the 16th of April? But I digress. You know, there's that game. There is Boston and Florida, tops for in the Atlantic, up for grabs there. Jake Gensel returns to Pittsburgh tonight as the Carolina Hurricanes face off against the Pens. And there's the Oilers and the Jets. And I want to park a couple of minutes here. And we've talked a lot on the podcast here about how important Gabe Vilardi has become to the Winnipeg Jets, and it was good to see him on the ice today. It was good to see, you know, Rick Bonus on the ice as well. You know, these are two teams that are wobbling a little bit. You know, Edmonton had the tough go through Ontario. The Winnipeg Jets, outside of that game against the Rangers last week, it's a tough one against New Jersey, tough against the Islanders, and then Sunday tough against the Washington Capitals. How do you see these two teams right now, the Jets and the Oilers, two WHA rivals?
Well, as you said, you're right. It was important to see Vilardi and Bonus back today. I guess they said that he's going to skate with the team every day, and we'll see when he's ready enough to play. That'll be interesting. Like, they need him. He's left, he's left a big hole in their lineup and in their power play. The thing about Winnipeg is, I actually thought they played really well on Sunday in Washington. They just got beat. I said on the pod the other day that I think with the Jets, number one, it's their structure. Like, we talked about LA's structure. I find the Jets, when they're a structured team, they're really good. And when it breaks down, they're really terrible. I'm not sure that's really genius. I'm sure that's probably the same for a lot of teams. But I also think that with the Jets, I think the other thing that's they make some line changes and then they kind of go back to them. So I don't know. I'm kind of like, maybe want to see them try a few more things here and there. Generally I don't worry about them too much. I think they're pretty good. I mean, the Oilers had a bad weekend. They got their asses kicked in Toronto. I thought they played really well in Ottawa, and they simply got goalied. Like, that's a game you just can't lose. And when you're up 3-1 in Ottawa, even if Korpisalo was standing on his head, like, you just can't have that happen to you. So, I think they really had a bad weekend, and I expect to see them a lot different tonight.
It's going to be an emotional one in Pittsburgh tonight. And this is a Pittsburgh Penguins team that seems and has seemed all season long to be, you know, discombobulated. At times they've looked fantastic, and then there's been long stretches, specifically on the power play, where we've wondered a lot about this team, and has the clock already struck midnight for them? Jake Gensel returns tonight as a member of the Carolina Hurricanes. We've talked about how players like Chris Letang have struggled pretty much since the Jake Gensel trade. And we talked about, you know, Sidney Crosby's comments after the Gensel trade, as the team seems to have, you know, albeit maybe even just briefly, waved the white flag here and sort of surrendered the season. What do you think this is going to be like for the fans? What do you think it's going to be like for Crosby, Letang, Pittsburgh Penguins? And he returns as a member of the Carolina Hurricanes, a team that's, you know, battling for top spot in the Metropolitan now more so than ever, now that the goalies are healthy and have heated up. You got our legitimate candidates for the Stanley Cup. What's this night going to be like in Pittsburgh tonight, Friedge?
Well, it's a great question. First of all, I would assume there'll be a tribute video. No doubt about that.
Yep.
Kyle Dubas loves his tribute videos, so you know there will be that tonight. You know there will be a big ovation. You know, when Gensel came through Toronto, when he came through in 8 days after the trade deadline, so it would be 9 days after he was traded, he was very emotional. Like, he talked about that day. And when I asked what it was like to say goodbye to those guys, he kind of paused and you could see the look on his face. Like, it was... So this will be an emotional night for those guys. But, man, they look good, those Hurricanes. And he's looked very good there, fits in very nicely. It'll be a big money on the board game tonight, Jeff. That's for sure.
And there's some players on that Pittsburgh Penguins team that have a lot of money to put on the board, Elliot Friedman,
yes,
as we all know. Enjoy the action tonight. 12 games on the go around the NHL. Including as you just went to the practices this morning, the New Jersey Devils facing off against the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll chat soon. You be well.
All right, buddy. Take care, man.